Open your Bibles, please, once again, to the book of Ruth. It's been quite a while since we've been back in Ruth. If my calendar is correct, it was December the 12th was the last time we were in this book. And so between this day, today, and December 12th, of course, we've had a couple of Sundays devoted to Christmas. And then, of course, we were away on vacation. And then New Year's came along, and then something about the annual meeting. We usually do something different for that. And then Sanctity of Life Sunday, and so now we're finally back into the book of Ruth. So many of you were here back on December the 12th, and I'm sure you remember the message from way back then, over a month ago. We were looking at the perilous plan that Naomi had put together to try to join or try to kind of matchmake for Ruth and Boaz. So she told Ruth to go to the threshing floor, wait until Boaz had gone to sleep, and then uncover his feet and lay down. Naomi believed that Boaz would wake up, find Ruth lying there, and then basically tell her what to do. She believed that Boaz would respond appropriately to Ruth being there lying at his feet. In fact, this whole story, this whole plan revolves around Boaz's good character and wisdom. This is why it's a rather delicate and even a dangerous plan, because Naomi doesn't know for sure how Boaz is going to respond to this, what's going to happen when he finds this woman lying at his feet in the middle of the night. Naomi seems to be confident that Boaz will do the right thing. Boaz has proven himself to be a good and a godly man. Boaz is a man of virtue. He's a man with a good reputation. He is trustworthy. He was not like so many other people of that era. Remember that this is happening during the time of the judges. And what characterized that time? Every man did what was right in his own eyes. Everybody just kind of did what they felt like doing. So there were not too many people who were living a godly, biblically oriented sort of a lifestyle. But fortunately, Boaz was one who did. Boaz was a godly man, a virtuous man, a man with good character and good reputation. So Naomi had confidence in Boaz. He would wake up, find Ruth lying there, and he would tell her what to do. He would do the next right thing. Well, we, like these characters, must respond to challenges and temptations of life with virtue and honor. From time to time, there may come a temptation, there may come a challenge, there may come a kind of a difficult time into our lives where we could do right or we could do wrong, or maybe we could compromise. And the Bible tells us that we should do the right thing, make the right choice, live according to virtue and honor no matter what. We may think that we are virtuous people. We may think that we could withstand temptation until the opportunity comes up to blow it. The opportunity comes up to give in to temptation. The opportunity comes up to not be very virtuous. Everything's fine and everything's wonderful until we are tested and tried and put into a situation where it might be fun, it might be interesting, it might be exciting to give in to that temptation. And so these two characters find themselves in a situation where they very easily could have given in to temptation, but both of them are virtuous people, faithful people, loyal people, and they end up doing the right thing. And so we need to follow that example when we are in a situation that may be somewhat challenging, somewhat tempting, where we have the opportunity to be less than virtuous. We need to make sure that we do the right thing, make the right choice, and live according to virtue and honor. We should also note in this passage the two words that we've defined previously, goel and chesed. Boaz is the goel, that is, he's the near kinsman. He's the one who's responsible for taking care of other people in the family. And then there's chesed as well, this loving loyalty that Ruth shows toward both Naomi and Boaz. Well, before going on, we should remember or remind ourselves the overall theme of the book is how God demonstrates his faithfulness by loving, superintending, and caring for his people. We're going to find here how God is going to provide a home and security for both Naomi and Ruth. And he's going to do this through or maybe even in spite of this perilous plan that Naomi has put together. God is going to continue to provide for his faithful people. Well, last time, way back in December, we looked at the first part of this. We saw that Naomi hatched this plan. She got together this plan or thought up this idea of how she could somehow join Boaz and Ruth. And then Ruth agreed to do it. If you were listening when David read the passage, Ruth said, "Everything that you told me to do, that's what I'll do." So she went to the threshing floor. She waited until Boaz was done with his meal. He laid down there near the pile of grain. She probably waited until she felt that he was asleep. It says she came in carefully or softly, in other words, kind of secretly, and she uncovered his feet and laid down apparently at his feet. So everything is going according to plan. The question is, was Naomi proper? Was it right for her to trust that Boaz would do the next thing right, that he would respond appropriately to this? So thirdly then, in their outline, is that Boaz responds to the plan. So notice verse 9, Boaz awakes. Maybe we should look at verse 8. It came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. So this is exactly according to plan. Boaz woke up probably because he had cold feet, I imagine. Since Ruth uncovered his feet, it says he was afraid. We don't know if he had a dream or for whatever cause, but he probably had cold feet. He woke up and looked around, and behold, there's a woman lying at his feet. So in the dimness of the light, remember this is at midnight. It's in the middle of the night. He didn't just roll over and click on the light or use his cell phone to turn on the little flashlight or something. Obviously, there's not a whole lot of light. He can't see who this is. And so he asks who the woman is. And Ruth quickly identifies herself and goes on to ask the pertinent question, the big question that she came to ask, where she says, "Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." So what is she asking for here when she says, "Spread your skirt over your handmaid"? Well, the word skirt is literally wing. In fact, it is often translated that way. Turn back one page, probably in your Bible, to Ruth 2:12, where this is Boaz again speaking, "The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings," there's the same word as skirt, "wings thou art come to trust." So when she says, "Spread your skirt or spread your wing over your handmaid," the idea of the spreading of the wing is to extend protective care over that individual. You are caring for, you're taking care of, you're making a commitment to that individual when you spread your wing or your skirt over him or her. Ruth had the protection now of the wings of the God of Israel. She's trusting under his wing. And now she's asking if Boaz will bring her under his wing for protection and security. This kind of language is used elsewhere in the Bible as well. Ezekiel 16:8, the prophet or the Lord speaking here says, "I spread my wing over you and covered you. Yes, I swore an oath and you entered into a covenant with me and you became mine." So in this case, to spread the wing over an individual indicates something about marriage. He talks about, in this Ezekiel passage, entering into covenant and you became mine. I spread my wing and, as it were, we were married. So the language here is clear. It's very clear to Boaz what Ruth is asking. Ruth's request amounted to a proposal of marriage. She is essentially popping the question now to Boaz. And so the request is clearly that he would extend his protection and care over Ruth, and the normal way that you would do that would be to get married. One of the key responsibilities for men in marriage is protection and care for his wife. When you get married, you're taking your wife under your wing. That is the biblical expectation, that the man would be able to provide security and protection for his wife. Culture today, unfortunately, has rejected the biblical and the traditional view of marital roles. Today, our culture is saying, you don't even need to get married. You can have a so-called relationship with another individual. You don't have to get married. You can behave as if you are married, but not actually have that commitment to the other person. You don't have to get married, and you certainly don't have to follow the traditional roles of marriage. Here, in this case and in many other places in the Bible, it suggests or teaches that the role of the man is to provide the security and the protection. Well, today's culture says, men and women are interchangeable. In fact, if you're a man and want to be a woman, you can do that. If you're a woman and want to be a man, you can do that. So men and women are fairly interchangeable in our society today. So we can't have roles, traditional roles for men and women in marriage. Well, the Bible is very clear that there are traditional roles, there are biblical roles for men and women in marriage, and this is one of those that pertains to men. The man is supposed to take his wife under his wing in the sense of providing security and provision, protection for his wife. And frankly, if a man cannot do that, he's really not in a position to marry. He's got to be able to do that, to provide the protection, the care, the provision for his wife. And if he can't do that, really he can't function as a husband then, biblically speaking. Well, Boaz had no problem with that. He was a man of means. He was a great man of high reputation and virtue. And so there was no problem for him taking Ruth under his wing. Also, another interesting detail here in this exchange, as I read it through, in the proposition of marriage, I suppose if a man is proposing marriage to you ladies, what do you want to hear before he says, will you marry me? Other than, you know, a big ring with a big honking stone on the front of it. What do you want to hear from his lips before he says, will you marry me? Three little words. I love you, right? Well, there's no exchange of romantic sentiments here whatsoever. There's no expression of love. You know, Ruth doesn't say, we've been dating now for 3 years and we've planned our lives together. Don't you think it's about time to get married? And, you know, there's nothing from Boaz talking about romance and love and warm feelings and lovey-dovey things that you typically think of in a proposal. I don't know if, you know, Ruth is still lying on the ground, or maybe she got up on one knee or something and made this proposal. It doesn't really follow the typical, you know, thing that we do when we go through the process. So this is not a romantic thing. This is not a measure of romance or emotion that is drawing these two people together. This is really a biblical kind of a love here. It's not the romantic emotional kind of a love, but it's love. It's a bit more biblical, like 1 Corinthians chapter 13 kind of love. So what is this kind of love that is exchanged here between the two? We don't exactly know what kind of feelings that Boaz and Ruth had for one another. Ruth does seem to be interested in Boaz, and Boaz in Ruth. Perhaps it never even entered the mind of Boaz to pursue Ruth as a spouse. We don't know. In any case, we don't find a declaration of love here. But the biblical definition of love is really doing what is in the best interest of the other person. It is doing what's best for somebody else. And in this case, what would be best for Ruth would be to get married to a man who could take care of her. And so Boaz shows his love by doing what is in the best interests of Ruth. Because of his love for Ruth, he wants to provide security and a home for her. So we have to look maybe a little bit below the surface to see that there is an expression of love here. It's not the romantic, warm and cuddly kind of love maybe, but it certainly is a biblical form of love to do what is best for the other person. You know, speaking of that, emotions and passion are wonderful in the time leading up to the marriage, and of course, once you get married, there should be those emotions and there should be that passion there. But that is not really what's going to hold a marriage together. We see people getting divorced all the time, especially if you hear in the news, certain people are getting divorced, Hollywood people, and it's usually they're married for a few years, and then the emotions change. Their love for one another change, and all of a sudden they don't feel the same way as they used to one another, and so they get a divorce. It's all based on feelings. It's all based on the so-called love and romance of the relationship. It's not really based on a commitment. Well, biblical love is based on a commitment. A long-lasting biblical marriage is based on that commitment that the two make to one another. We know that emotions ebb and flow. Emotions go up and down. And so if you're marrying somebody and your marriage is based on how you feel about that individual on any particular day, well, we all know that our feelings are going to change almost daily. If you were to act on all your feelings toward your spouse, well, we all know that it'd be a chaos, it'd be a disaster. So we don't act on our feelings necessarily. We don't base our relationship on how we feel internally. We base our long-lasting relationship on commitment. That's what a marriage is. It's a covenant. It's a binding agreement between two people that will keep them together. And so it's not the feeling of love and emotion that keeps you together. It's that commitment that you've made to one another that keeps you together. And again, if a person's not willing to make that kind of a long-lasting covenant commitment, then he or she is simply not ready for marriage. So by asking Boaz to spread his skirt over her, Ruth is really asking if he will make that kind of a commitment to her. Will he play the goel? Will he be the one who takes care of the matters in the family? So how does he respond to this? Well, first of all, he compliments Ruth. He says, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter," in verse 10, "for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followest not after young men, whether poor or rich." So interesting language here. He calls Ruth his daughter. Now that he's done that before, earlier when Ruth was gleaning in his fields, he called her my daughter, and here he does it again. So this has led to some speculation regarding the age difference between the two of them. You probably know this. In my case, I'm about almost 11 years older than my wife. I wanted to get a young wife who could take care of me in my old age. So when I've got Alzheimer's and I need to be pushed around in a wheelchair, she'll be there. She'll be 10 or 11 years younger than I am, so I got it made. Well, we don't know what the age difference was here, but it seems as if there's some age difference. I mean, some people, if you look at the text and try to get a handle on the ages here, Ruth is probably, I'm guessing, in her mid to late 20s. Boaz, I think, is a bit older than that. Now, there's, again, speculation as not to only his age, but also his marital status. If he's willing to marry Ruth, it probably means that he's not married. But if he's later in his life, maybe late 30s, maybe somewhere in his 40s, or some people speculate even older than that, it's highly unlikely that a Jewish man would be unmarried at an advanced age, in the sense of never having married. If he was married, it's probably true that his wife had died by this point. For him to be married, almost all Jewish men were married in their early 20s, if not before that. It almost always happened that way in that culture. So for him to be an older man, maybe in his late to mid, you know, late 30s, early 40s, for him never to have been married, that is probably unlikely. But it is potential that his wife had died. So maybe both Ruth and Boaz had lost their spouses. And so there's an age differential here, but both had probably been married before. Obviously Ruth had. There's no way to know exactly what Boaz's situation was. But it seems like he is older, but probably not old enough so that Ruth would be in the age range of his actual daughter. When he says my daughter, it doesn't mean that, you know, Ruth is of the age that she could actually be his daughter. That's just kind of a common way of speaking. It's kind of a polite term of endearment, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there was, you know, 20 years between the two of them. There could have been, but not necessarily. So again, it's somewhat speculative as to finding out what the age is between the two of them. The language does suggest, though, that Boaz is probably older than Ruth is by some years. He next states that Ruth has shown kindness in this decision to pursue him as the goel instead of somebody else. She could have sought marriage with a man of her own age, but instead she's seeking marriage from a man who is connected to her family. Remember the word mercy here, or kindness. Notice he says in verse 10, thou hast showed more kindness here. That's that word chesed. It usually is translated, especially referring to God, mercy or loving kindness. The idea, especially between people, is more like loyalty. So she has shown loyalty more, as he says here, in the latter end than at the beginning. In other words, what you're doing right now to contract a marriage with the goel as part of this family, that has shown great loyalty, in fact, more than what she did previously, which was taking care of Naomi. So she has shown chesed, she has shown kindness or loyalty both to Boaz in pursuing him as part of that family, remaining within the family, rather than trying to find a husband among just the other men of her age, and by taking care of Naomi earlier. Somebody put it this way, she has not followed natural inclinations in seeking a young man in marriage, but has shown a responsible attitude to the family in looking to her goel, that is Boaz, as her marriage partner. So Boaz clearly understands what Ruth is saying here. Remember, Ruth has said, spread your skirt or your wing over your handmaid, and Boaz says, you've shown kindness in doing this, in remaining within the family. So he clearly interprets this as a marriage proposal. He knows what Ruth is trying to ask. And so following this pattern, I guess, you young ladies who are considering marriage, you know, if you really want to get married to a guy, just ask. I mean, that's what Ruth did. You don't have to wait around for the man to ask you. If you got a guy in mind and you think he's going to be a good partner, just go ahead and, you know, wait until he goes to sleep and lay down at his feet and uncover his feet and then wake up and tell him you want to get married. Well, maybe that's not the greatest example to follow, but clearly this is kind of a unique situation. Well, he accepts then Ruth's proposal in verse 11, at least provisionally. He says, "Now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people know that thou art a virtuous woman." So he basically accepts the proposal, at least provisionally. He notes here that everybody knows that Ruth is a virtuous woman, a woman of character and honor. Even though Ruth was a foreigner, she was from Moab, after all. She came here. She doesn't live here. She's not one of us. And yet all the people of the city know that she is a virtuous woman because she's been taking care of Naomi. You remember, the whole city was talking about Ruth and Naomi when they came back from Moab. So everybody knows what Ruth has been doing. For these several months, she's been out in the fields gleaning, taking care of Naomi, who really apparently can't take care of those things herself. Well, I hope that all women strive to be known as women of high virtue and character, people who are honorable, as he says here. You are a virtuous woman. In fact, that's the same phrase used over in Proverbs 31. Who can find a virtuous woman? It's the same thing. So Ruth here is a virtuous, honorable person. And she provides an example, I think, for women. Women ought to try to emulate the character of the virtuous woman in Proverbs 31. And also Ruth. She's a good example to follow as well. I hope all women and all men as well, but particularly we're focusing on women here with Ruth, everybody ought to be known as a virtuous person, an honorable person, a person of high character. And of course, we see that kindness that Ruth displayed toward Naomi and toward Boaz and probably to others as well. That kindness, that honorable, that loyalty that's being displayed, that's what made her a virtuous woman, and that's what makes any woman virtuous. Before going on, we should pause here to look at this story that some people have suggested as they look at this story, that something improper or even immoral happened here between Boaz and Ruth. However, the fact that Boaz praises Ruth as a virtuous woman certainly shows that nothing inappropriate or immoral happened. Somebody noted that there is not the slightest hint of impropriety between Ruth and Boaz. The actions of the two are entirely righteous. Now, we know that biblical writers are not exactly squeamish about telling us if something inappropriate or immoral has happened. You can go through, especially the Old Testament, when something immoral happens, the biblical writers usually tell us. So the biblical writers are not exactly hiding immoral behavior. They tell us out in the open if something like that happened. And of course, there's not even a hint that anything like that happened here. The text does not suggest that anything inappropriate happened. These are honorable, faithful, virtuous people, even given the opportunity for immorality. And we can't deny that this would have been an opportunity. So this happens at night. Nobody is watching. This is a private location. A man is lying down and a woman lies down virtually next to him in the middle of the night in a private location. So could something have happened? Well, with other people, no doubt something could have happened. But with both Boaz and Ruth being virtuous people, nothing inappropriate happened here at all. Boaz easily could have taken advantage of Ruth. Remember, Boaz is a man of power, authority, and reputation in the community. He's a man of wealth. He's a great man. Ruth is what? She's a foreigner. People don't have any particular expectations of her. She's almost a nobody, although she has a good reputation developing around the people. But if Boaz wanted to do anything inappropriate with Ruth, he probably could have gotten away with it, because he's a man of wealth and power and authority in the town. And he could have done virtually whatever he wanted to do here, even without Ruth's approval. But the fact that that does not happen shows that these are virtuous people. Somebody put it this way: both Ruth and Boaz acted virtuously in a situation they knew could have turned out otherwise. So again, this is, I think, another example of facing a time of temptation, a time of challenge, and where easily either one of these characters could have done the wrong thing. Because of their virtue and their honor, they both do the right thing. Remember, the purpose of the book is to show how God provides for those who are faithful, those who are honorable and virtuous. Even when given the opportunity for immorality, these two characters behave themselves with godly virtue and honor. All of us, I think, from time to time, come across situations. We endure things that cause a challenge, you might say, to our virtue or our ability to withstand temptation. It's inner virtue, good character, and reputation that prevents us from giving into temptation. It's really commitment to God and to God's commandments that gets us, that get us through these times of temptation without falling, without committing immorality. It's very common today for people to indulge their appetites, to give in to their sinful desires. But when that opportunity presents itself, they do not withstand it. They do not endure the temptation. They give in. They simply capitulate. They simply indulge their appetites and passions. It's very common for those, in fact, people like Boaz with power and authority, with money, to abuse those who are weak. Christians must not use their power to abuse others. The Bible in no uncertain terms tells us to flee from fornication and immorality. It's strength of inner character that prevents us from falling into temptation. So we may think that we are strong and virtuous people, but really it's when that temptation is available. It's when you could get away with it. It's when you could fall to temptation. You really feel like giving into temptation, and yet you don't. It's that inner virtue and character that prevents you from getting into temptation or falling to temptation. That's what's got to be strong. And so the Bible says in the New Testament, "Let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall." Again, any one of us are susceptible potentially to temptation. Think of King David, a godly man, a man after God's own heart, and yet given the right situation, he fell to temptation. And so we need to develop and maintain and strengthen that inner virtue so that when we are facing temptation, when we do have an opportunity, here's an opportunity for any number of sinful behaviors, they didn't give in. They didn't capitulate. They didn't give in to their natural passions, and they both did the right thing. And so that's because of inner virtue. That's because of inner honorability, and all of us need to develop that virtue and honor within ourselves. Well, then going on here, he notes then a potential problem with the plan. Verse 12, "And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman. I can act as the goel." There's that word goel. Howbeit there is a kinsman nearer than I." So the goel does have the responsibility to take care of this problem for the family. However, somebody else has that responsibility who's closer of a relative. So there's somebody probably, who would this be? The text doesn't say what the relationship is. Perhaps there's a first cousin of Elimelech or a first cousin of Ruth's former husband, somebody in the family who is closer than Boaz is. The fact that Boaz is willing to defer to the nearer kinsman shows us that he is a man of integrity and honor. Again, he could have said, "Okay, I really want Ruth as my wife, and I'm going to try to do an end around. I'm going to try to make sure this happens for me because this is what I want." But instead, he's willing to defer. He's willing to say, "Well, according to law and custom, there is somebody else that we've got to notify about this first. I can't just unilaterally, just all by myself, just go ahead and do this. I've got to go through the regular system." So he's not going to break tradition just for the benefit of himself. He's not going to break the rules just to get what he wants to get. And you know, it's kind of unfortunate that many people today don't care about rules, customs, or traditions if it stands in the way of getting what they want. I want something. This is not the normal, usual way of getting it, but I can get it through manipulation, and so I'm going to manipulate things to get what I want instead of following the custom, the tradition, the law. And as Christians, we should have a high regard for the law, of course, but as well, customs and traditions, doing things the proper way, at the right time, the right people, getting the proper permissions. We ought to try to do things properly. And even if it's costly, Boaz is here, he says, "Well, there is somebody else, and I've got to go through this other procedure." And even though it seems as if Boaz is interested in Ruth, he says, we've got to do it the right way. It may be costly. I may lose the opportunity to marry Ruth, but I've got to do it the proper way. And so we need to follow that example as well. Follow the proper way of doing things. Not just do whatever we feel like doing, getting what we can because we could get it, but instead following the law and the appropriate way of doing things. So this closer relative, if, he says in verse 13, tarry this night, if it shall, it shall be in the morning, that if he will perform unto thee the part of the kinsman well, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of the kinsman to thee, then I will do the part of the kinsman to thee, as the Lord liveth, lie down until morning. Okay, so Boaz says that if the other relative is unwilling to play this role, then he will take that role on. And then he finishes it with an oath, as the Lord liveth. Okay, so this is the strongest oath that a Jewish person could take, the name of God. Remember that we're not to take the name of the Lord in vain, but they were to swear by the name of the Lord. And so saying that you swear in God's name is as strong as a promise as you can make. And so that's what Boaz determines to do. He says, I will, with all that I'm worth, everything that I have, I will try to do this. He accepts Ruth's offer of marriage, at least provisionally or tentatively. So they are, from this point, engaged in a certain sense. I don't know that Ruth brought out a ring, an engagement ring, and they probably didn't take pictures, engagement pictures, and they probably didn't send out announcements or put anything on social media. But provisionally or tentatively speaking, they are now engaged. Going on in verse 14, he protects Ruth's reputation. She lay at his feet until morning. She rose up before one could know another. And he said, let it not be known that a woman came into the floor, to the threshing floor. Now, why did he do that? Well, I think it's an effort to protect her reputation. Boaz is concerned that no one found out that the woman had come to the floor. And at this time, frankly, it was not uncommon for women to visit men as they were out at the threshing floor. Now, these were not typically virtuous women who would visit men on the farm out on the threshing floor. These would be just the opposite kind of a woman. So this was not uncommon or unknown of that, harlots would come out and try to consort with the men as they're out in the fields. And so Boaz is concerned that he doesn't want Ruth to be known as that kind of a woman. So he wants her to go before the sun comes up. So he proves him, I think again himself, to be a virtuous and honorable person because he wants to protect Ruth's reputation. And again, I think that's a good example for us to follow. Sometimes it's easy just to believe the gossip or believe the worst about people. You hear, so-and-so did something, and the immediate thing is to look at it in the worst possible way. But I think as Christians, we want to give people the benefit of the doubt. And just because something potentially a little bit sketchy has happened, it doesn't necessarily mean that anything bad actually happened. And so we need to give people the benefit of the doubt and think well of people until we're proven wrong. He then provides more barley for Ruth. He said in verse 15, bring the veil that thou hast upon thee and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her, and she went into the city. Okay, so the women at this time wore a veil. It's called a veil here, but it's kind of like a shawl or a wrap of some sort. And this would be almost like a big kind of a sheet thing that they would wrap around their head and their shoulders, and it would cover them, especially if they're outside. And, of course, she's out at night, and so this is kind of a cover for her. And so it'd be very easy for that thing to contain 6 measures. Now, it doesn't say how much, but maybe I'm thinking 6 scoops or something like that of this barley material that they had just harvested and taken care of. So he gives that to her and sends her home with it. And then she goes home, verse 15, verse 16 and following. She came to her mother-in-law, and she said unto her, she said, who art thou, my daughter? Now, that's kind of an interesting expression itself. Doesn't Naomi know who Ruth is? Well, obviously, the expression probably means something like, how did it go? Or the other option is that maybe she's asking, what is your status now? Who are you now? Are you still Ruth the Moabitess widow? Or now are you Boaz's wife? What's your status? So it's not as if, Naomi doesn't know who Ruth is. She's just asking How did things go, or what is your status? And so then Ruth reports everything that happened. She told her, it says in verse 16, she told her all that the man had done unto her. He gave me the 6 measures of barley. Don't go empty to the mother-in-law. Then she said, verse 18, sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall, for the man will not be in rest until he has finished the thing this day. And so Naomi knows that Boaz is the kind of guy who will resolve this issue as soon as possible. He's not just going to sit on his hands. He's going to do something about this situation. He's going to try to bring a resolution, to try to make Ruth his wife. And Naomi tells Ruth to sit still and to wait to see how it's all going to fall out. Somebody said that her advice to wait reveals a stance of faith, a confident, expectant belief that only God could bring the venture to a successful conclusion. You know, Naomi, remember, Naomi changed her name to Mara. Mara means what again? Bitter. She's bitter. She said, the Lord sent me out, or she left full and I came back empty. The Lord's been very bitter to me. But still, even though the fact is she has had a bitter life, she's had a lot of bad experiences, now she seems to be more faithful. Now she seems to be more confident that God is going to work things out. She says, sit still and essentially let's see what is going to happen in the providence of God. We don't know, but we're trusting God to work things out. He thinks that everything is going to work out eventually. We often face times when we don't know how things are going to work out. It's during these times we need to follow Naomi's advice. Sit still and wait to see how the matter will fall. We must be patient and wait on God's providence. That's especially true when we have no control. Ruth and Naomi have no control now over what Boaz is about to do. How will things happen? Will he be able to marry Ruth? Well, that all kind of depends on Boaz and on the providence of God. So they're in a situation where they can't do anything about it. All they can do is wait, sit still and wait to see how things will fall out in God's providence. So all we can do is trust the Lord to work out things for his glory and for our good. And there are many times in life when we simply have to do that. I can't manipulate anything. I have no control. I have no power over this. I just have to wait and see how the Lord is going to do it. And that's a matter of faith, trusting that God is directing the steps of a good man, the steps of good people, his people, that God is providing, God is guiding, and will do what is right. So it looks like Naomi, her perilous plan has worked out. Naomi trusted that Boaz would do the right thing, and it looks like that he did. He knew what to do. Naomi's trust in Boaz was not misplaced. He proved himself in this case to be a man of virtue and honor. And likewise, all of us should be striving to live virtuous, honorable lives. When given the opportunity to sin, we should instead make the right decision and do the virtuous thing, do the right thing, make the right choice. Often we have to wait and see what the outcome of our plans will be. Are things going to work out as we hoped, or will our plans come to nothing? Well, that often depends simply on the providence of God. We should trust that God will work out his plan according to his own purposes. The Bible affirms that the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord. If we are people like Boaz and Ruth, then we can be confident that God is working behind the scenes to guide and order our steps. If we are honorable and virtuous people, we can sit still and wait as the Lord works out his plan in our lives. And I'll finish up with one of the Psalms, Psalm 27:14. Wait on the Lord. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thy heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Well, let's close in prayer.